Welcome to Torah Timecha, Nachyomi with the OU Women's Initiative. My name is Shira Shaiwitz, and today we'll be studying Shoftim Perek Chet, Chapter 8. Now, in the aftermath of the war with Midian, we glimpse Gideon in a few additional leadership moments. And the first scene is when Gideon is approached by the tribe of Ephraim, who come to him with a complaint. Vayomer alav ish Ephraim. Ma davar zeh asher asita lanu livilti kirot lanu ki halachta lehilachem b'midyan. Their biggest taina here is, Gideon, you're going out to war. Why didn't you call us to come with you? Gideon is from the tribe of Manasseh, and Ephraim now says, we would have helped you with the war. It's a little bit hard to believe the sincerity of Ephraim's complaint, because part of the big issue in the book of Shoftim has been getting the tribes to help out when they didn't feel directly affected. And perhaps Gideon feels this, that this is not necessarily a sincere complaint. And coupled with the fact, Vayirivun Itoba Hazaka, they fought with him harshly and sharply, we would expect that Gideon would have little patience for this type of complaint. And yet, he responds with a really excellent piece of diplomacy. Vayomer Alehem, this is Pasuk Bet, Me'asiti Ata Kachem. Right, I haven't done anything compared to what you did. Halo tov olot Ephraim mivitzir aviezer. Right, Ephraim's gleanings, which are considered the worst of the produce, are better than Aviezer's vintage. Meaning, what Ephraim has done is so much better than what me from the tribe of Aviezer has done. Now, what has Ephraim done? Right? He says, Ephraim, you're the ones who finished it up. You're the ones who took Sarei Midian, the officers of Midian, when I called you at the end of the war. You took Orev and Ze'ev, and I couldn't have done anything like that. And actually, Gideon's words hit home. The pasuk ends, Az raftaru chamealav b'dibro hadavar hazeh. They calm down. And I think this shows a really important piece of leadership, that you have to choose when to fight. And Gideon, in this case, rather than starting a tribal, intertribal war, softens them, brings them down, even if it's not coming from a sincere place. Now, the second scene is actually a direct contrast to that, because in the second scene, we see where Gideon does take a hard line against other members of his own nation. And this takes place when Gideon is actually not done, because he takes his 300 soldiers and he crosses the Jordan in search of Zebach and Salmunna, who are the kings of Midian. Now, on his way, he stops in the town of Sukkot and asks for food, but they turn him down because he has not yet captured the two kings of Midian. And Gideon responds to them with a threat. And he says, when Hashem actually gives me Zebach and Salmunna in my hands, I'm going to return with these kings and I will scrape your bodies with thorns and thistles. After these words, Gideon then turns to the next Jewish city of Penuel. And when he asks them for food, he gets a very similar response. And he responds to them with another threat that he'll destroy their tower that is protecting them in their city. Gideon then leaves the scene with his soldiers. They find the two kings and wipe out their camp of 15,000 with their 300 soldiers. And true to his word, Gideon returns to both of those cities. And he doesn't kill the two kings right away, and we understand why. He wants to show the town of Sukkot and Penuel that, yes, here, I actualized it. I did what I said I would do. And he goes to them and he says, here, you see, here are the kings of Midian, the ones that you denied me because I didn't yet have them. And then he responds in a very harsh way. This is Pasuk Ted Zion, Vayikach et Zikne Ha'ir, in the town of Sukkot. He takes the elders of the city, Vet Kotzea Midbar V'yatabra Kanim. He takes the thorns and the thistles, Vayodabahem et Anche Sukkot. And he uses them to kill the elders and the people of Sukkot. And then he returns and also kills the tower of Penuel. In a way, it's so different than the response to Ephraim, right? With Ephraim, he calmed them down. Here with Sukkot and Penuel, he responds very harshly to their distancing themselves from him and his leadership and what he was doing for them. But I think it's this idea of the denial of food to hungry people who are serving your cause is really the ultimate offense. Even, you know, earlier in Chumash, in the entering into Israel the first time, when Ammon and Moab denied food to Bnei Israel when they were coming into that same land, actually, on the other side of the Jordan, this resulted in the commandment that both Ammon and Moab are not able to marry into the Jewish nation for many forever, because they didn't give them bread and water when they were leaving Egypt. So this idea that from his own people he'd be denied food when they come to him hungry is what triggers Gideon's ire and gives that sharp punishment. Once Gideon has responded to his internal threats from Sukkot and Penuel, then he turns his attention to Zebah and Salmuna, the two kings, and he asked his son actually first to kill them. His son is too young, Odenu Na'ar, so Gideon comes and he kills them, and he then leaves. Now the war is over. And the parak ends with our first overt discussion of leadership. Now, we mentioned in the very beginning that leadership is going to be a very big issue and a topic under discussion of Sefer Shoftim. The initial problem that we begin with is that there is no centralized leadership, a total contrast from Sefer Yoshua. And the people of Israel feel this. And in Pasuk Chaf Bet, they turn to Gideon. Vayomru ish Yisrael el Gideon, Mishol banu gamata, gam bincha, gam ben binecha. Ki hoshatanu miyad midyan, rule over us. And this word mashol is another way of saying maloch. Please, we're ready for a king. This isn't working. This system isn't working. And we want the dynastic rulership that you will be the king. You're the one who saved us from Midian. Your son will take over. And then his son will take over after him. We need that stability. They realize that they need more. Gideon responds back strongly with a very anti-monarchy statement. Vayomer lehem Gideon, lo imshol ani bachem, velo imshol b'ni bachem. I won't rule over you, my son won't rule over you. Hashem imshol bachem. Only God can rule over you. And he takes a strong religious stance here. And this is a truth that the inherent danger of having a king, having somebody that we put all our hope and trust in, is that it will take us away from the real hope and trust, which is Hashem. And that's Gideon's response. Gideon then makes a very strange request from the people. In Pasuk Chaf Dalet, Gideon asks them to donate from the booty that they've gathered from the wars. Give me gold earrings. Give me what you have. And he collects all this gold. People contribute happily and readily. And he takes the gold and he makes it into an ephod. Now, the word ephod, we know from the Kohen. It's part of the Kohen Gadol's garments. It was a very special breastplate. So we're not sure exactly what this is. We know he uses the jewels, the gold to make it. But is it a monument? It's a little bit unclear. And Gideon creates this ephod. This is Pasuk Chav Zayin. Vayas oto Gideon le'ephod. Vayatzeg oto be'iro be'ofra. So he puts the ephod in Ofra, his hometown. Vayiznu kol Yisrael acharav sham. So all the people of Israel are led astray because of this ephod. And most Rishonim assume that the ephod was made as a remembrance of the miracle and of the salvation. But it didn't actually end well. And there are clear connections, even here, to Aaron at Chet HaEgel, who also collected jewelry from the people, intending to do right, but ended up leading the people astray and ultimately to idolatry. We have two endings to the story of Gideon. The first ending is a happy one. In Pasuk Chav Chet, Vayikna Midian lifnei bnei Israel, v'lo yasfu laseit rosham. So Midian is downtrodden before bnei Israel, and they can't raise their heads anymore. Vatishko ta'aretz arba'im shana b'imei Gideon. And the land was quiet 40 years. We get our round number again. This all happened in the days of Gideon. And Gideon died, it tells us then. He had a good death. He would live to an old age. And he was buried along with his father, Yoash, in Ophrah. And we remember then that Yoash was actually the first person who helped Gedeon and came out to defend him when he took down the Mizbeach of Baal and built a new Mizbeach for Hashem. But on the other hand, Gedeon's legacy is very complicated. We continue reading, Vayhi kasher mate Gedeon, after Gedeon died, Vayashuvu b'nei Yisrael, Vayiznu acharei ha-ba'alim. Vayasimu lahem ba'al brit l'elokim. So after Gedeon died, then the Jews went astray after Baal, and they even adopted Baal brit as their god. V'lo zachru b'nei Yisrael et Hashem Elohei kehem ha-metzil otam miyad kol oveh misaviv. They didn't remember God who had saved them from all their enemies that surrounded them. V'lo asu chesed im be'iru ba'al Gedeon kechol ha-tova asher asa im Yisrael. And they didn't respond in kindness to Gedeon, to Yerubbaal, for all the good that he had done. And it's true, Gedeon did do tov. He did good for B'nai Israel. That's an understatement. He started out his career as a defender of Israel. The Malach told him, Lech b'kochacha zeh, take this strength to really defend them, to fight the fight and take them against their enemies. Over time, with Hashem's encouragement and miracles, Gedeon grew in his confidence, and he was able to successfully defend B'nai Israel from Midian, earning them those 40 years of quiet from the enemy. But B'nai Israel realized that this piecemeal leadership system is difficult. And Gedeon himself, though, recognizes that the dangers of kingship can lead them away from Hashem. So he resists the people's request to be their king. And yet, it's also this same Gedeon who built the ephod that ultimately leads the people astray. Perhaps that despite good intentions, Gedeon resisted the kingship, but his actions, though, did not necessarily reflect that. We're told also at the very end of this parak that Gedeon had 70 sons because he had nashim rabot hayulo, and the language there echoes really the restrictions of the king. The king can't have nashim rabot. A king can't have too many wives because, A, that was the custom of kings. Kings wanted to have a lot of heirs. And also because that was part of that power going too far. So we see that Gedeon really did, after the war with Midian, he did have many wives, many children. And we also learned that he had a Pilegesh who lived in Shechem and who had a son whose name was Avimelech. Avimelech meaning my father is king. Now, it's not clear that this was a name that Gedeon gave to his son, or perhaps more likely, this was the name that his mother or Avimelech gave to himself. But there's a little bit of something there in the descriptions at the end of the parak that tell us that perhaps Gedeon did go too far in leading like he was an all-powerful king. And with the ephod, we'll never know Gedeon's real intentions. And very likely, it was meant to bring the people closer to Hashem, as was his protest against the kingship. I don't want to be the barrier that gets between you and your relationship with Hashem. But maybe there was also an element here of self-centeredness, which is really very difficult given all the good that he did and all the, I'm sure, adoration that he was receiving from the people. And perhaps one of the most powerful messages of the end of this story is how hard it is to be self-aware about the negative effects of power. Part of the danger for Gedeon in particular was that he inhabited all the leadership roles, right? Not like Devorah and Barak, he was the king and the prophet, two forces that are meant to balance each other out. And perhaps when I say the king, I don't mean that he was actually the king, but I mean in ways he was acting as the king. He was leading the people. He was leading the army. And he was also the one speaking to Hashem. And perhaps at the end of his life, he was reaching for an element of the kahuna, of the priesthood as well. And on the one hand, we're left with a need for stable leadership. And we can recognize the importance of that already. But on the other hand, when too much power is in the hands of one person, that can also lead the people astray. Thank you for studying together, Le'ilo Nishmat, Frida Bat Moshe Eliyahu.